Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the inaugural event of The Public Good, Knowledge as the Foundation for a Democratic Society. The Chief Executive Officer of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, Leslie C. Berlowitz.
Members of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Philosophical Society, the National Academies, the Host Committee, distinguished guests, it is my honor to welcome all of you to this historic occasion. The American Philosophical Society was created 264 years ago. The American Academy has been serving the nation for 227 years. Our gathering here in the nation's capital marks the first time that our two organizations, America's oldest learned societies, along with the National Academies, have jointly assembled. So welcome. Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, our founders, would have applauded this weekend's program dedicated to advancing the public good. Although sometimes intellectual rivals, both felt passionate about the importance of knowledge and learning for sustaining democratic principles. The American Philosophical Society and the Academy were established during the tumultuous years leading up to the American Revolution. Less than a century later, in the midst of the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln signed legislation to create the National Academy of Sciences. The only U.S. president to hold a patent, Lincoln recognized the federally chartered National Academy as a way to support the technical and scientific advancement of a then divided country. Franklin, Adams, and Lincoln viewed these institutions as critical components of nation building. With us tonight are American Philosophical Society President Baruch Blumberg, American Academy of Arts and Sciences President Emilio Bizzi, the leadership of the National Academies, Ralph Cicerone, President of the National Academy of Sciences and Chair of the National Research Council, Harvey Feinberg, President of the Institute of Medicine, as well as William Friend, Treasurer of the National Academy of Engineering. We also wish to acknowledge the members of the board of the Association, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, who have joined us, represented by Chairman John Holdren and President David Baltimore. I want to take this opportunity to thank the dedicated staff of the academies who've worked so hard to organize these proceedings. We have also had remarkably savvy and good-humored partners in our colleagues at all of the academies, but we are especially grateful to Mary and Richard Dunn for their wit, wisdom, and energetic collaboration in this enterprise. In the next 2 days, we will hear from leading scholars and policymakers with broad experience and diverse perspectives. But this program is more than a series of discussions. It implies a new national imperative, a call to actions for our leaders and our representatives, and a reminder to ourselves that enlightened public policy requires solid knowledge and thoughtful analysis.
The co-executive officer of the American Philosophical Society, Mary Maples Dunn.
Thank you, Leslie. It's wonderful to have this special joint meeting come to life after months of preparation. And it's altogether fitting that we should gather this evening in this magnificent museum. In 1826, British scientist James Smithson wrote in his will that his estate should go to the United States of America to found at Washington, under the name of the Smithsonian Institution, an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge among men. Well, the increase and diffusion of knowledge among men and women are at the very core of our society's missions and our principal purpose behind this unprecedented joint meeting. On behalf of both the Academy and the Philosophical Society, Leslie and I would like to make two important acknowledgments. First, we pay tribute to Yaroslav Pelikan, a member of both our organizations and past president of the Academy. Jerry died last year, but not before sowing the seed for this conference. One of America's great public intellectuals, his interest and expertise knew no boundaries. He was a man of big ideas with a gift for cross-disciplinary exploration. His inspiration for our organizations to convene jointly was conceived in that spirit. We also wish to express our sincere appreciation to a shared member, Ambassador Leonore Annenberg, to the Annenberg Foundation Trust at Sunnylands, and its program and center director, Kathleen Hall Jameson. Also a member of both the Academy and the Philosophical Society, Kathleen has lent invaluable guidance, and the foundation has provided generous support to make this conference possible. For organizations such as ours, with deep and rich histories, it is always tempting to dwell on the past. Certainly, we'll indulge in a bit of that this evening. But our purpose is, more importantly, to focus on the present and the future. Our societies are energetic and vibrant. Our missions have never been more vital. Our members have never been more essential to the public good of our nation and the world. And we are honored to have you with us tonight.
The President of the American Philosophical Society, member of the National Academy of Sciences and the Institute of Medicine, senior member of Fox Chase Cancer Center, University Professor of Medicine and Anthropology at the University of Pennsylvania, and winner of the 1976 Nobel Prize in Medicine, Baruch S. Blumberg.
Let me add my warm welcome to those of the others. It is a great pleasure to join with the presidents of our sister academies for this grand occasion of and convocation of America's intellectual leaders. On May 14, 1743, Benjamin Franklin sat in Philadelphia and composed an announcement that was to lead to the establishment of the American Philosophical Society. I would like to read a brief passage from that document, which Franklin titled, "A Proposal for Promoting Useful Knowledge Among the British Plantations in America." The first drudgery of settling new colonies, which confines the attention of people to mere necessities, is now pretty well over. And there are many in every province and circumstances that set them at ease and afford leisure to cultivate the finer arts and improve the common stock of knowledge. To such of those who are men of speculation, many hints must from time to time arise, many observations occur, which, if well examined, pursued, and improved, might produce discoveries to the advantage of some or all of the British colonies, but British plantations, or to the benefit of mankind in general. But as from the extent of the country, such persons are widely separated and seldom can see and converse to be acquainted with each other, so that many useful particulars remain uncommunicated, die with the discoverers, and are lost to mankind. It is to remedy this inconvenience for the future proposed that one society be formed of virtuosi or ingenious men residing in the several colonies to be called the American Philosophical Society. Our societies are old, and they have persisted through enormous changes in our country and the world. But the early principles set out by Franklin and his colleagues can still help to propel us wisely into an exciting and unknown future.
The President of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, member of the National Academy of Sciences and the Institute of Medicine, an institute professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Emilio Bizzi.
It is also my honor to add my welcome to all of you. John Adams first imagined the American Academy when he was a member of the Continental Congress sitting in Philadelphia. There, he introduced a resolution that each colony establish a society for the encouragement of agriculture, arts, and commerce. He went on to exhort his fellow members to, and I'm quoting here, to tenderly and kindly cherish the means of knowledge, end of quote. Adams and his fellows, scholar patriots, shared a conviction that knowledge is a foundation for lasting government. They believed they had a responsibility to society. In creating the academy, they were motivated by the need to diffuse knowledge broadly and to improve mankind. Then, as now, the academy focused on cherishing knowledge as a means of creating a civil society. Now, as then, we draw upon the best thinking of our fellows and outside experts to engage in studies of practical consequence to the nation. On this occasion, we are pleased to join our sister academies, all of whom date their founding to critical times in the building of this nation. I would like to draw your attention to the statement printed on the back of your program. This joint statement, drafted in conjunction with a convocation, with this convocation, was signed by the presidents of all five the academies represented here tonight. It reaffirms our commitment to knowledge in service to the public interest. And today was entered into the congressional record by the Academy Fellow, Senator Ted Kennedy.
The President of the National Academy of Sciences, Chair of the National Research Council, and member of the American Academy and the American Philosophical Society, Ralph J. Cicerone.
Good evening. We're looking forward to a wonderful weekend of discussions, and we want to thank our colleagues for the idea and all the organizational work that's gone into it. Why was the National Academy of Sciences created, and what is its mission? Creating the National Academy of Sciences in 1863, in the middle of the Civil War, was bold. The dreams and efforts of a small band of American scientists and the vision of President Abraham Lincoln and Congress, led by Massachusetts Senator Henry Wilson, deserve credit for creating an independent organization that would bestow honor on its members and provide advice to the government. That bold act can today be judged as a wise act as well, for science permeates our daily lives in ways that were unimaginable in 1863. The Act of Incorporation states, "The Academy shall, whenever called upon by any department of the government, investigate, examine, experiment, and report upon any subject of science or art. But the Academy shall receive no compensation whatever for any services to the government of the United States." Former president of the NAS, Frank Jewett, said, "It is one of the most sweeping delegations of power coupled with obligation of service to the nation which has ever been made to a group of citizens completely outside the control of political government." In less than 40 words, the Act of Incorporation created in the whole domain of science a Supreme Court of final advice beyond which there was no higher authority in the nation. So, the National Academy of Sciences was created to respond to government when requested, and importantly, to do so independently. We are nonprofit, we do not receive an annual appropriation from Congress, and we are self-perpetuating and self-regulating. To extend the scope of the National Academy of Sciences, its council formed the National Research Council in 1916. President Woodrow Wilson, by executive order, gave permanent status to the NRC in 1918, which has been reaffirmed by subsequent presidents of the United States. The National Academy of Engineering was created in 1965 under the original charter of the NAS, and the Institute of Medicine followed in 1970. the scope and vitality of the NAS together with the National Research Council, the National Academy of Engineering, and the Institute of Medicine demonstrate that we are able to respond to requests from almost anywhere in the government and the nation, and we produce approximately 200 peer-reviewed reports each year. Underlying this ambitious agenda for the day-to-day work of the NAS and the NRC is the need to re-energize our national enthusiasm for science at a time when there are an unprecedented number of competing demands for our collective attention. By gathering with the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and the American Philosophical Society this weekend to focus on some of the most pressing issues facing the nation, we honor the trust and the obligation that the nation has placed upon us to work for the public good by advancing, evaluating, and applying scientific knowledge. Thank you.
The President of the Institute of Medicine and Fellow of the American Academy, Harvey V. Feinberg.
Good evening. It's a distinct honor for me to join my colleagues in welcoming you this evening. I represent the youngest of the academies and what some regard as the world's second oldest profession. Just a few blocks from where we sit stands the Keck Center of the National Academies. Engraved on a stone beside its entrance are these words from Thomas Jefferson. Liberty is the great parent of science and of virtue. A nation will be great in both, always in proportion as it is free. An agrarian society in Jefferson's time, America progressed over more than two centuries through an industrial economy and into the information age. Expanding knowledge about the way the world works, revealed through science, has been a key to social progress, and knowledge in all domains has never been more vital to society than it is today. If, as Jefferson said, liberty begets science, and if science engenders knowledge, then the great challenge for our generation is more than simply acquiring new knowledge. It is learning to apply that knowledge wisely, to improve the quality of our lives and the length of our years, to protect the planet that sustains all life, to create beyond wealth genuine progress in the human condition, to make common cause with others in the world who share these aspirations, and to preserve those precious liberties that make all the rest possible and worthwhile.